Today, because I have all my notes on my phone, and my phone is not working. So, I'm going to talk from memory, but we'll learn the Haggadah, some ideas about the Haggadah. And before we begin, we will learn today, Lezecher Ulili Nishmas. Your brother-in-law, Mr. Chaim Skolnick's brother-in-law. His name is Elio Shmai Ben Nata. May his neshama have an aliyah. May the learning be a zuchus for the aliyah of his neshama. Okay, so let's begin. What? I'm using your phone. I'm using your phone as a recorder. Okay.
Want the coffee?
No. Fine. Okay. Okay, so let's begin. Now, I want to throw out an idea, which is an incomplete idea, but it's something to think about. I don't have this worked out. It just intrigued me, and you can think about it and say whatever you want to say. You're not going to get an argument from me. The idea is we were learning the Daf Yomi 2 days ago, and the Gemara there asked a question. It's a very, very difficult question on one of the Amoraim. I think it was Rav Chisda. And the Gemara, basically, the question was such a tough question. Okay, the Gemara... Can you turn on the phone? The Gemara asked the question, and the Gemara at the end of the question did not have an answer. Okay, the Gemara... I already set it up. Let's see what's going on. Okay. The Gemara asked the question, and the Gemara did not give an answer to the question. Okay, and the Gemara did not use any word to conclude its question. Asked a question, the question was so powerful, it was a direct head-on collision with the statement of Rav Chisda, and the Gemara just stops right there. So we got into a discussion in showing that when the Gemara asks questions to which there is no answer, it appears that there are four basic terms the Gemara uses. There are four basic terms the Gemara uses. There are four terms the Gemara uses to express its frustration with a question that does not have a good answer. Four different terms. Sometimes, probably the most famous is teku. Teku, the Gemara is a question, there's no answer. The Gemara says teku, which means let the question stand. Now, we like to say teku means tishvi, yitaretz, kushyos v'abayas. It's an acronym, four words, that tishvi is a code word for the Melech HaMashiach. Yitaretz, he will one day come along and answer the kushyos, the abayos, all of the difficulties that we have, all difficulties. That's a drush, but the simple translation of the word teku is let this question stand. Adarab, sometimes it's not a mila, it's not a good thing to get an answer. Sometimes in life it's better to remain with a question. It's a deep idea. Sometimes a question, you know, the question, that itself is the answer. That itself is the resolution. There should be a question. Let the question stand and remain as a question. Sometimes the Gemara says, Tuyufta, if you ask the question, you know something? The question is such a good question, it will force us now to reevaluate and to destroy everything that we have been building thus far, because the question is just so...
Refutation.
It's a refutation. We're going to call in the demolition crew, and we're going to demolish this beautiful structure that we've spent all this time building.
Start all over
again. Tayufta. Well, you've built a whole beautiful lundis, a whole three daf gemara, and then we cite the source that clearly indicates that there's something fundamentally wrong with your premise. And the whole binyan comes toppling down. Yeah, that's called a tuyufta.
You have that in the Gemara. For example, the one that...
I know.
That's what he's talking about. We're talking about the Gemara.
Is that what it is?
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about going through in the style of the Gemara. Sometimes the Gemara asks a question, and the Gemara is baffled. So second, to review, sometimes the Gemara concludes, Teku. I don't have an answer. We don't have an answer. Let the question stand. And sometimes the Gemara, I'm talking about the Gemara now, I'm talking about the Talmud Bavli. Talmud Bavli. The Gemara presents a whole structure, a whole alumnus, and then the Gemara concludes, but it says in this Braisa, this Mishnah, it says the opposite. And the Gemara says, you know something? I have no tricks left in my bag. I have to confess. Tiyufta, you have refuted my premise, you have refuted my principle, and everything I said, ignore. You can just wipe out, start all over again, and we have to go back and go down a different path to understand the sugya. Sometimes the Gemara says, Koshya. The Gemara presents an alumnus, a yisoid, and then we ask questions, and we have a question, and the Gemara says, no, Koshya. It's a difficulty. And the way most of the commentators explain the term kashya, it's a question, but nothing changes. Doesn't matter. The principle, the premise, the yisoid, the concept is ironclad. You got a question? All right, you got a question. We got to deal with it kashya. It's a difficult question. Usually it means think about it and you'll figure out a solution. There is a solution. What? No, take was much more powerful. Take was an acknowledgement that there's a real question, that there is no answer. Question usually has a connotation, there is an answer. If you just think about it a little bit more, you'll come, it's a good question, but there's an answer. Think about it, you'll find an answer. Nothing changes. Teku is a much more potent statement. It means this question is a real question. There's no games to play here. You can shut us down, okay? You come for inspection, we failed inspection, we got a problem. But you know something? We're not shutting down. Let the question stand.
Well, that's what the Gemara at the end of Kedushin says, basically. I mean, only he's going to have to just, that's it. There's no way we could come up with it. It's things we don't know.
Right, that's a Jewish. Take Tishbe Yitareitz. I don't want to go down Tishbe Yitareitz approach now. That's all right. That's just let's little basic terms. Teku is let the question stand. And then there's the fourth response to a question, which is the Daf Yomi 2 days ago, is the Gemara asks a question, and it is such a difficult question, the Gemara doesn't say anything. Ask the question, dot. There's a dot. And now we begin the next sugya, quiet. Now, that is subject to interpretation. What does it mean when the... No, not that type of shtikha yidah. In this sugya that we learned 2 days ago, it's not shtikha yidah. It basically means is that the question is such a good question, like we're almost embarrassed. We don't even say to yufta. Not for now. We're not going to the sugya. We're not going to the daf yomi now. It's a long sugya. I just want to bring out this basically. What I'm telling you now is just something to think about. If you study the Gemara, it appears by studying the daf enough, learning the daf yomi enough. You will discover that there are four different types of responses to a question. The Gemara presents a principle, and then the Gemara challenges the principle, and at the end of the challenge, the Gemara says one of four things. Either the Gemara wins, that the questions are just nonsense, we push away the questions, we just knock them away, but when the Gemara at the end of the day concludes, you know something? We got a problem. We got a problem here. We have presented a principle, and we have been challenged, and we have to be moide al ha'emes, that there is a real problem here. The terminology the Gemara uses to acknowledge the difficulty is one of four terms. Either it says nothing, zero, silence. Silence is golden. And according to the commentators, in most of those situations, it's not shtikha yidah. It means, you got me. But the Gemara does not acknowledge, doesn't say anything, just quiet. The other response is tiyufta. We acknowledge that we have been refuted, and we have charata. We backtrack. We demolish the principle, the structure that we have built. The third time the Gemara says kashya, no, you have a kasha. Nothing, business as usual. And the fourth expression is teku. You have touched upon something that is fundamentally correct. We have a real problem, but you know something? Let the question remain. We will go down our path. You'll go down our path. Teku. So this got me thinking. Why did it get me thinking? Because in the Haggadah, there are four questions. Now, I know you'll tell me yesterday we said that the Manishtan are not questions. Manishtan is Man Noira Hamokoim Hazer. Okay, I told you, Ein Meshiv Nala Drush. Each drush is separate. Pashtus is that the Dalit, the four, the Manishtana are four questions. What's the answer to the four questions?
But the questions changed also, no?
Okay, but in our Haggadah today, you're right, the questions changed from the time of the Beis Hamikdash to the time there is today, and some even the Rambam, different more of the questions. But let's look at the basic Haggadah. Everyone today, we live in America, we live in the melting pot, we all use one Haggadah, this is the Hashgacha, there are four questions. There are four questions. I told you, there's not a complete Vart. So the first question is, Ma Nishtana Halayla Zimikol Halashimchol, Halayla ze kula matzah. Do we answer that question in the Haggadah?
Yes.
We do answer that question. Okay. Shebechol halelos anochlim sh'or yirokos halayla hazeh moror.
Yes.
Shebechol halelos anu ma'afilu. We don't dip. Tonight we dip twice.
Yes.
Answer that question?
No.
Shebechol halelos anochlim ben yoyshim ben misubin halayla ze kulanu misubin. Now, everyone, all the commentators from beginning to end will tell you that these questions, besides the Pshuta Shel Mikra, the simple translation which we explain and we dwell upon, and of course, Ein Mikra Yotzei Mina Pshutai. You don't play with Pshat. But everyone can help themselves from delving in to something a little bit deeper. And the first thing, the basic Yisoid is the word Laila. What is the word Laila? The word Laila is Golos, the dark, bitter Golos. So there are many different types of Golos. All of the dark, bitter exiles, Anu Oichlim Chometz Umatzah, Halaila Hazeh Kuloi Matzah. So many of the commentators want to learn this to refer to the Golos of Edom. Like we just concluded, it's the Sefer Avadia, is that the Golos of Edom is different than the Golos of Bovel, Parasumadai, Yavon. It just doesn't get better. All of the other, thank you very much, all of the other exiles, there was Chometz, which simply refers to, you can dash to whatever you want. I'm not trying to tell you the complete Vart over here. I just want to bring out a point. Just to bring out this, Chometz is, there was a Tzara, is the Chometz represents the Sa'or Shebi Isa, represents the Yetzirah, got the better of us, prevailed upon us, caused us to be Nichshol. In its wake came all of the difficulties, but Matzah, which is the opposite. Kula matzah. Okay, let's go all the way around. Chometz. All right, I don't want to go there because it's going to take too long to play with this. There are four questions, and many of the commentators, they see in the question not just a simple translation of the word chometz matzah. They see concepts. They see nisyonos that we struggle with throughout history. And when you want to look at the questions in that form, then the Haggadah does not necessarily answer the questions. When you look at it in that way. Now let me just give you the simple thing which is just very simple. Shebechol halelos anu oichlim shor yirokos halayla hazem morar. All other leilos and the other exiles, the other periods of Jewish history, it came a time where we ate vegetables, meaning things that were not bitter. But in this golos, it's moror. It's just purely bitter. There's no let up. The golos of Edom, almost 2,000 years, Klal Yisrael suffers from one to the next. Is there really an answer to that question? Why this golos? Why it's kuloi moror? Why there is so much suffering? The question of dipping. What do we dip the karpas? We dip the karpas into salt water. The karpas represents samach perach. 600,000, 60 times 10,000 Jews suffered crushing hard labor, and we dip it in salt water to represent the tears of that crushing hard labor. We dip the maror, the bitterness, in the charoses, which has wine, which represents blood, which represents thick cement. Why do we suffer so much? Why do the Jewish people suffer so much? You want to talk about chametz u'matzah? Okay, yeah, mesubin, not mesubin. I'm just throwing out ideas. And if you, when you look at the questions, and you do not translate them literally, but you look into a deeper meaning of the questions, which almost all the major mepharshim do, and the first most basic thing that they focus on is the word Laila, and Laila is a code word for the bitter galus, and specifically the galus that we're referring to is the galus that we are currently in, the fourth galus, galus Edoim. We've gone through, we've survived Egypt, we've survived the other three of Bavel, we've survived Paras u'Magi, we've survived Yavan, but Edom we just can't shake out of. We're just stuck in this galus. It's almost been 2,000 years and we just can't shake out of it. And the history of what has happened to Klal Yisrael in the long galus is just not to be believed. Starting with Beitar, okay, starting with the beginning of the after, besides the Churban, 52 years later, the Churban of Beitar, it's not to be fathomed what happened in Beitar. It was a Holocaust. And then you go and you want to go talk about all the horrors, the pogroms leading up until the time of the First Crusade, and then the First Crusade, and then the subsequent Crusades, and then the expulsions, and the Inquisition, and what happened in Russia, and taxation, and then going to the Chmielnytsky massacres in Poland, and going to World War I, World War II, the Holocaust, and today in the Intifada. There's no end. There's no end. And that's really what we're dwelling upon on the four questions. Why is this Laila different? Why can't we shake out of it? And Mr. Rappaport, when you go down that path, there is no answer.
How do you explain the positive?
There is no, but you agree with me?
How do you explain the positive questions that we ask?
I'll play Peshat. When you want to go look at it, I'll derech Peshat. It's all, it's delicious.
No, but you said Mara, the Golas is bitter.
It's it's celebration. If you want to go look at this, that we're purely coming to commemorate Egypt, what happened in Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's a commemoration. It's Pashut.
I'm asking your Jewish.
Yes.
We're in this galus. So I understand the question of the Mara is a bit of. But what about the Kolana Masubin? More relaxed, more relaxed. How do you explain that?
So what does it mean, misum? So I'll tell you very simple, because Chazal say, why do we do Haseba? We are all of the opinion, cheros. But you know, there's a chazal that says something very disturbing. It's vayasev Elokim es ha'om derech eretz derech hamidbar. Vayasev Hashem. What we would have expected is to be able to enter Eretz Yisrael directly, to walk right into Eretz Yisrael derech eretz Palishtim. But Hashem says no. They'll say, So what did Hashem do? He took us in a roundabout way for 40 years. That's why we do Haseba. Not because Haseba is derech eretz. Today is Haseba derech eretz. Mm-hmm. Who today does Haseba? It's the biggest tircha for a person to do Haseba. No one likes to do Haseba. No one is comfortable doing Haseba. It's not what you're used to. It doesn't feel right. It's a burden. All upright. You're going to get your clothing all dirty. It's a very disturbing thing to do at the Seder. That's called Cheirus. So you're going to say, yeah, this is the way it was in the time of Chazal. This is Cheirus. Ein Achinami. That's the Pshuta Shel Mikra. No one's coming to deny that. But Ayin Panim L'Torah, especially where it's a Maimer Chazal. A Maimer Chazal Vayaseva Lukim. The reason why Chazal Masakin is Seba is because to remind us that we were not worthy that we should be able to go directly into Egypt. We had to go in a roundabout way because Hashem knew that we were weak, feeble, penyinochemam. So therefore, when you drink your wine, Don't sit up at the table comfortable. Oh, I'm a chaya. You should be very uncomfortable when you drink your wine, like we are today. When you drink your wine, no one's happy about going and leaning on the left side and doing a seba. You have to lean. There's so many different opinions of how do you do a seba, what's the proper way to do a seba, this and that. Everyone is not at ease. You know why? Because the cheres that you're experiencing tonight to commemorate the Yitzias Mitzrayim was not a pure cheres. Because if it was a pure cheres, Hashem would have taken you directly into Eretz Yisrael and you would have been there 1, 2, 3 without going in the desert for 40 years and having all these problems and challenging Hashem 10 times and making a lot of trouble. You would have gone straight in. Because the cheres, there's something lacking in the cheres. So when you drink your wine to commemorate the Exodus, don't get so carried away with yourself. You should be in a state of discomfort. One thing at a time. So you see, all the other galus, sometimes we have a seba, no seba, sometimes Hashem helps us, we go straight. Yashar, Purim, we went right, the miracle happened, 1, 2, 3, no problem. Comes in this galus, we're going in circles. Heseba, we can't get ourselves, we're going nowhere. Okay, this is the basic, you said, the basic idea is, you look at the commentators, the word Laila is a code word for galus. And the questions that we're asking are, why is this galus qualitatively and quantitatively different than the other galuyos that the Jewish people have suffered in our history, which are another four, pretty much, Mitzrayim and Bavel, Paras Amadai, and Yavan. Why is galus Edom, is this Laila, this galus, why are we stuck in the mud? And we express this in four different ways. There's the pshat, which is a simple translation, but the drush is not so hard to comprehend. This is not a wild drush. The drush is almost right in front of you. Mesubin is a chazal, vayaseva lukim esam derech hamidbar. And the maror, I mean, that's poshut, you don't have to elaborate. This golus is pure maror. And the dipping represents that the Jews have suffered the shedding of blood. We're drenched in blood. And the tears of the suffering. It's not so hard to understand this drush. And when you look at the questions in this fashion, don't tell me you're going to find in the Haggadah an answer to these questions. You're not going to find an answer to these questions. There is no answer. Moshe Rabbeinu tried to find an answer to this question. Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem, Hashem, a tzaddik v'raloi, what's going on over here? And Hashem said, there is no answer. And Taka Moshe Rabbeinu, he was the one who asked the four questions. You know why Moshe Rabbeinu was not mentioned in the Haggadah? Because Moshe didn't get an answer to the questions. Moshe didn't get an answer to the questions. So Memela, Moshe, we don't focus on Moshe. He asked a question, Tzadik V'ralo, we asked the questions, we don't get an answer. So we don't want to give too much credit to Moshe.
But the Amos knew the Kates. Yaakov knew the Kates. He wasn't allowed to reveal it.
It says he knew the Kates. It doesn't mean they understood the suffering. Where does it say that the Amos understood Jewish suffering? You have any Chazal that say that? They knew when the Mashiach will come, the year, the calendar year.
Well, that will be the end of the suffering, no? And the
suffering. End of the suffering, but what about all the suffering until then? What's the reason? What's the reason? Explain the reason why there is suffering. Just because the suffering will come to an end, does that justify why there is suffering? Doesn't justify why there is suffering. Moshe wanted to understand why is there suffering?
Why is there?
Tzadik v'raloi.
We don't know what that means here.
One second. Moshe Rabbeinu said, when he said, Achein noda hadovor.
Yeah.
How did we get into this mess? What was bothering him? And the answer he got was when he saw that there were those among us who, Bethlehem and Aviram,
yeah,
in particular, who saw there were traitors among us, there were those who that we did not stick together, and therefore, and that was, and that's the answer.
Okay, but it's not a complete answer. Therefore, this is what I'm just trying to, I want to bring out this idea. And you have to think about the four different questions and relate them to the four different elements of frustration of why we suffer in galus. And the Gemara, the Talmud, when it discusses questions and does not have answers, has four different ways to acknowledge we got a problem. There is utter silence. There is a teiku, a tiyufta, and a koshya. Four different ways the Talmud acknowledges we got a problem and we don't have a perfect solution. We have here a major question. Why do we suffer? Tzadik v'ra'ala. That's the summary of the four questions when you translate the word Laila as galus. Why is this galus more severe, more difficult? And when you read the words, we focus on different elements of suffering in our galus. And some elements of suffering, maybe. And we come to the different elements of suffering in galus. Some things, I get it. I understand. I deserve it. There are gedolei yisrael that are matzdik alei mesadin. Right? Remember we had that discussion with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Riatz. When the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe met the Satmar Rav for the first time after the war. After the war in America, they had a public meeting. And the Lubavitcher of the Riyadh said, he says that he has mamish, either way, the quotation of his words, his words are shocking words. He basically says that he has tainus on the Ribbono Shel Olam. We didn't deserve this. We didn't deserve this patch. Shocking things. Someone would say that today, they would say not be chorus to say such the way he said it. He says, we didn't deserve what Hashem did to us, the hollow, we did not deserve it. And it's not fair. That's what the Lubavitcher Rebbe said. The sixth. And the Satmar Rav says we did deserve it. We got what we deserved. We got what we deserved. And this is a public conversation between two Gedolei Yisrael. Two Gedolei Yisrael relating to the Holocaust. Okay? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff. So there are elements. There are elements. Oh, who's right? Well, these are great people. There are elements of each one that are certainly true. We don't understand. Each to his own. Each person to his own can understand one maybe little prat. There are different elements in the question. The overall question is there is no answer. Tzadik v'raloi. There is no answer. No one will ever know. Hashem said Moshe. I'm not telling you. There is no answer. V'ra'isa ufarnai lo yirahu. But there are different levels. There are different madregos of not understanding why. There are different madregos. That's the four questions. And the four questions, each one of these four questions, I'm suggesting, this has to be developed to go into more detail of how each one of the four questions relates to an unanswered question. When the Haggadah is over, the bottom line is the question is not answered. But to what degree is it not answered? Is the end of the Seder, I asked four questions, and and my father didn't answer me. Nothing. Zero. I didn't get any answer. He just talked around it. Like a politician. He just spoke around it. Is that the way you walk out of the Seder? Or do you walk out of the Seder? My father said, Teiku. So good question. Doesn't change anything. And sometimes I walk out of the Seder to Yufta. My question is such a good question, something has to change. Something, there's a shake-up. There's going to be a major shakeup in the world after the Seder because the questions are just so good. We can't maintain the status quo. Something has to change. And sometimes, Kostya, it's a good question, but I get it. I really understand the answer to the question. I understand why, a little bit, I can relate to what happened. All of those acknowledgments of an unanswered question are all alluded to, hinted to in the Haggadah. Okay, so we're taking the Haggadah, we're not learning Pshat, we're learning Drush, we're learning about a question of why do we suffer in Golos, why do the Jews suffer in Golos the way that we suffer, and we're focusing on four different dimensions of our suffering, and in the Talmud there are four different ways to acknowledge that you got a good question, and the whole Haggadah is coming to express those four different terms, Tiyufta, Teiku, Koshya, and Lematzasi Leguf Toiv Mishtiga.
Are you able to relate to Chacham Rosh and the Tam to
you? Maybe. This is for you. I told you this is an open idea. They have to say in code, in programming, it's called open source.
What
open source? It used to be in the olden days, in the Friedrich Gedeiris. In the Friedrich Gedeiris, you go buy from Microsoft, you buy Word. Oh, they make a program. The code is heavily guarded. The code that was written by the programmers, how they get the software to do what it's supposed to do, was heavily guarded. The only ones that had access to see, you have to have a Q level clearance, you know, from the companies to see the special code. Because chas v'shalom, if a competitor in China sees the brilliance in how we've designed this program, they'll steal it from us, and they'll make better, they'll build upon it, and they'll put us out of business. And today, it's mamish pumfaker. Unbelievable how it's an incredible hakara in the world. You should know this idea I'm telling you over here it represents ruchnius. It's adaraba. Today, it's the biggest smile of a company to present to the world what's called open source. Open source software. Everyone can see every koitzoy shel yod. And adaraba, we invite you to make it better. Make it best social media. It's our social media approach. Make it better. You want to add another function. You want to add what's called a hook. You want to add another element. Adaraba. We have the complete. We maintain control. That's the milah. We have control. You just add your code, and our engineers will look it over and will immediately incorporate it. You can incorporate it for yourself. Should we incorporate it as the official version? Should it be? It's an amazing thing. So. Open source. Okay, yes. Well,
I was going to ask a question. When the Gemara uses the word shayin, it's usually there's a stira.
Yeah.
For example, a brisa, meisen to a brisa. So Gemara says, okay, you have a stira. So what's the stira here in the four kashas? A stira against what? For example, when did Hashem decide that it's time?
Stira.
I know you see talking about this one. But if you read Posh Pshat in the Chumash, Hashem heard the cry said, now's the time, I got to
do it,
right? That was the time. So where's the stira in the four kashas of the Golas or present of Elilah? And as you're saying, we have a Golas now.
Yeah.
It's a kasha. Okay, why do we have it? But when you use the four shayas that you're referencing in the Gemara, there's usually a shayla from another source
yeah.
that conflicts with this. Abaya says the seer, brings a brisa. Rava says the seer, brings a brisa. The Gemara says, you're right, it's a kasha. Where's the stira of the two statements that you're referencing on earth? It's a great, to me, a great kasha. We have a Golas now. Fine. But
that's the four questions. The four questions, why is this Golas? What I'm telling this point that I'm not making of this one, everyone says it, almost every Haggadah. Why is this Golas more severe than all of our other tzaras in Jewish history? That in essence is tzaddik viraloi. Every suffering comes to an end, or that we can understand the suffering. In all the previous exiles, we were able to comprehend, to recognize the emes, why we deserve to suffer to a degree. This Golas, we're totally clueless. That's the question. Ma nishtano halayla hazeh mikol halaylos. All right, we have to go further. We'll talk privately. I appreciate the question. Yes, it's a very good question. We'll discuss this further privately. Well, let's go a little further. Another idea. Now let's discuss that. This idea in the Haggadah is a very powerful idea. Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Shachter elaborates upon very quickly, very briefly. He touched upon. Today there's a very big dilemma amongst Jewry all over the world as to what is the secret. Rabbi Isai, please, what is the secret to Jewish continuity? What is the secret? What should we focus on to guarantee that the next generation be loyal to our tradition? So we discussed many times, everyone out there in the world has different ideas. And they're all the truth is, Elu v'Elu, Divrei Elokim, Chaim, everyone, this truth to everything. Some will tell you birthright. The most important thing is that teenagers should go to Eretz Yisrael, develop a love for the land. If they develop a love for the land, then when they'll come back to America and they'll go to college, they will remain Jews. They'll remain religious Jews. That's the ikar. Some will tell you there has to be pride. Well, I've got all different approaches. Okay, but in the Haredi world, their approach is Torah, Jewish education. The only way, there's something magic about Jewish education. If you give a student a Jewish education, you teach him Torah, that will will bring him to life. There's something that's magical about Torah that allows a person to come back to life. In Eretz Yisrael, in the Kiruv movement, how are they Makariv people? What is the technique that they use? They use Lev L'Achim. There's what we call Lev L'Achim. What do they do, Lev L'Achim? They take people who have absolutely zero training. Good morning, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? They take people who have absolutely zero knowledge of Kiruv Rechaikim, and they tell them, we're giving you a Gemara, and you go to this neighborhood, you knock on the door to a hardcore chiloni, a person who has mamish, a hatred for a religious Jew. You knock on the door, make sure you wear your hat and your jacket, and your tzitzis are dangling. Your shirt should not be tucked in 100%, so you should look like an authentic Jew bacher. And make sure you don't polish your shoes either, so you know, make sure you preserve. And you knock on the door and you say, and the chiloni will look at you and spit in your face. And then you say to him, I want to learn with you a daf gemara. I don't want no politics. We're not discussing the draft. We're not going to discuss the army. We're not going to discuss occupation. We're not going to discuss anything. I want to spend with you a half an hour to learn a few lines gemara. We could fight, have a good fight over the few lines gemara. That's the technique. You do this in America, by the way, you go to jail. You try to do this in America, you knock on someone's door and you say, I'm coming into your house now, we're going to learn for half an hour. He calls the police and they put you in jail. That's so. America, this doesn't go. But in Eretz Yisrael, the people are Az, okay? It's a different culture. It's a whole different culture. And people do this. They do this. They instruct them. They go and they knock on doors. And right away there's a nasty conversation, and it's, give me half an hour, learn only Talmud, nothing but Talmud. They sit down, and this happens countless times, hundreds, thousands of times. They sit down, they learn a half an hour, and at the end of the conversation, at half an hour, the guy says, should I come back next week? Yeah, come back. I like this. This was interesting. Come back. And this technique, no one knows why. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. It works. Somehow the Kedusha that lies in Torah is so powerful. It's something which is... What? The light of Torah, no one understands why this works. But it works. It works. And this is one of many approaches. I told you, there's an approach of birthright. Nothing to do with Torah, purely all about going and developing a love for the land. Or, I forgot, there are many different types of techniques. Now, okay, and the truth is, Eilu v'Eilu divrei Elokim chayim. What works for one person doesn't work for another person. There's no criticism. Everything is good. Halavai, halavai, there should be more of everything. Don't be brainwashed. Become narrow in thinking only this technique works and nothing else. They all work. To each his own, each person has something to which appeals to them and works to them. Rav Shachter, in the Haggadah, he makes a very fascinating point. And he says here, in this Haggadah, in the Haggadah, what are you doing? In the Haggadah, it's basically a night of Jewish continuity. That's what you do. You sit down, the previous generation deals with the next generation. They sit down together and you have a conversation with your children. And you give over to them the Messiah. You pass the baton to the next generation. You tell them about our history, our legacy of Yitzias Mitzrayim Avad Lufaroi, and we were slaves, and Moshe Rabbeinu, and Hashem gave us the Torah, and you go through Jewish history, and you give over the legacy, the Jewish continuity to the children. And how do you do it? Chazal had at their disposal many techniques. And the way you give it over is by learning Torah. Everything in the Haggadah is all basically a daf gemara. It says in the pasuk, "Leman tizkres yom tzeischa mi'eretz mishrem kol yimei chayecha hayam." There's an extra word, "kol." Kol yimei chayecha halelus. That's according to one opinion. The other opinion says no. It means olam hazeh yimos hamashiach. We go through these intricate, detailed, Talmudic discussions, which, you know, is not for the average person. The average person is not a Talmudist. The average person, you know, you learn Gemara as a subject in yeshiva, and you know, you go on. Okay, not everyone sits in kollel their whole life and learns Talmud the whole day. And the Talmud is not so easy. It's drushes. These are fine points. And yet, the Baal Haggadah, and this is Gans Klalis, who doesn't have a Seder, even the religious have a Seder, this is the Nusach of the Haggadah. The Haggadah is by and large a Daf Gemara, taking the Durashos, Arami, we go through sections of Psukim, and we go to the Talmud, and we take the Talmud, and we darshan the Psukim in this intricate detail, back and forth, Shach v'Tariyeh, and that's how you give over the Mesorah to your children. Why didn't Chazal Misaki, in the way we'll have a little Pesach, to go on a field trip to Eretz Yisrael? Why didn't we have a Misaki that we should tell stories, have a fabreng, to sing and dance? Okay, another technique of Yadus is Breslov, to sing, to dance, to feel good. Some like the Kabbalistic approach. Okay, the Kabbalistic approach, the mystical approach. Why weren't Chazal Misakin to guarantee Jewish continuity with mysticism, with field trips, with storytelling? Don't tell me Ben Zoy, the story, that's not a story, that's more of a Gemara type of story. With singing and dancing. That's not the Haggadah. The Haggadah is dry. It's dry lumdus. It's not even an exciting daf gemara. Daf gemara, you have a list nagara to gemara. It's not even that. It's pretty dry. And yet, Chazal, they were clever. They knew what they were doing. And Chazal said, this is the way you're going to guarantee Jewish continuity, Jewish education. Education, the study of Talmud. It works. It has a koyach. There's something here in this technique.
See, they also connected it with food.
Okay, that's right, fine. In a chanami.
I mean, a meal.
Major element is that you have a shulchan aruch and you have karpas. He's saying
very
good.
Interesting what you're saying.
That food, right. This is the template to guarantee Jewish continuity. You have a lot of different elements. Maisa, you want to say a maisa, b'bnei brak. You want to say the food. You want to say, well, there are songs, dayenu, there are certain traditional nigunim, there are piyutim. There are many techniques being used here at the Seder to bring about Jewish continuity. But first and foremost, you cannot deny the fact, is raw, dry Gemara. That is not something that you could ignore. You cannot take that out of the equation. There are many things happening. Okay? But don't ignore the potency, the potential that there is in learning a daf gemara. It's not all that interesting sometimes. Hashar shenagach sapara. What is shar shenagach sapara going to go do for me today in 2019? How am I going to make a parnasa from learning shar shenagach sapara? Yet there's something in shar shenagach sapara that changes your neshama and commits you to being a better Jew. That's what you learn from the Haggadah. It's Rav Shachter. Rav Shachter, he brings out this point. Okay, let's go to another idea. Let's discuss why from all the different sections in Tanakh, in Chumash, even Chumash, so many things Chazal could have selected to dwell upon to bring out Yitzias Mitzrayim. And from all of the candidates that present themselves, what did they select? The Psukim of Bikurim. Why? Why the Psukim of Bikurim? So the basic answer, everyone asks this question. This is not a new question, an old question. Everyone says, Hakar Satoif. Bikurim, from all of the selections of Tanakh, expresses the theme of Hakar Satoif. It's a beautiful answer, and that's the main answer. It really starts and stops right there. But I want to tell you a couple of other answers, which bring out other ideas in the uniqueness of Bikurim. First, a very simple idea. Bikurim is the only Bikurim. When you bring Bikurim, you have to do something very unique that you don't do by any other mitzvah, b'chol ha-Torah kula. You have to put your Bikurim lefnei mizbach Hashem Elokecha. You bring the Bikurim, not like Truma, Manus Kahuna, like today in the Daf Yomi, that Manus Kahuna about giving the Zeroy Vela Chayav Yakeva, or giving the Reish Sagez, or giving all of the things that you do for the Kohanim, you don't have to go, you just give the Kohen. You call up your local Kohen and you go and you make an appointment, you give it to him. When it comes to Bikurim, you have to make a trip to Eretz Yisrael, but not like Maisa Sheni, where you just come to Eretz Yisrael, you go to a hotel and eat your Maisa Sheni. You have to go to the Beis HaMikdash. And it's not enough to go to the Beis HaMikdash. You have to deposit your Bikurim Lifnei Mizbach Hashem Elokecha, right in front of the Mizbeach. Now, why the Mizbeach? Obviously, there's something about the Mizbeach. Mizbeach, what does the Mizbeach simply represent? Sacrifice. Okay, there are many different, you can say many different things, but the Mizbeach is, it's a painful object in the Beis HaMikdash. It represents, you take an animal, you take its life, that you offer the neshama, taka, it's neshama, and it represents really, I should give up my life. I should give everything up for Hashem. The Mizbeach represents sacrifice. It's painful to give up. The Korban Pesach is a korban for the Gans Klal Yisrael. V'amartem Zevach Pesach. Okay, the whole you come into Pesach through offering a sacrifice. Judaism is not about taking. The Haschola of Judaism is the Korban Pesach. Klal Yisrael, we're told 4 days before Yitzias Mitzrayim, you're going to offer to Hashem a sacrifice. You're going to give up. You're going to pretend that you're giving up your own life to Hashem. Hashem does not want human sacrifice, so this will be your replacement. Judaism begins by giving, not by taking. When it comes to Hakaras HaTov, a recognition of the good that Hashem has done for us, the perfect recognition of Hakaras HaTov can only be in front of the Mizbeach. You go, someone does you a toiva, so you write a thank you card. Thank you so much, it was so nice of what you've done for me. You go send them a bottle of wine. If you say to them, you know, I recognize that by you giving me this gift, you sacrifice from yourself. The money you gave me, you could have used or you should have used for yourself, for your wife, your children, for your own pleasure. You've denied yourself pleasure in this world so I can have pleasure. That's a whole different type of Hakaras HaTov. Okay, it's one thing when you tell a person, thank you very much. You have $1 billion in the bank, so this is a drop in the bucket, you don't even know it's missing. Oh, it's nice of you that you took out of your time a moment to sign a check. It's very nice. You spent 5 minutes. You know, you thought about it. It's very, a very kind gesture. Did you sacrifice anything for me? Well, you gave up 5 minutes of your time. You could have been surfing the web those 5 minutes. You could have been doing whatever you wanted to do those 5 minutes. But that's a sacrifice. But that's not such a major sacrifice. Ain't it doime when a person really sacrifices? What parents do for their children? They give up everything. Their whole life is devoted to their children. When you do something for someone, a chaver, you can be spending this time having fun, enjoying yourself, and instead you decide to take away from your precious time and give it away to someone else who needs your help, to serve someone else. When you bring Bikurim, it's not just thank you very much, it's not just tam amida. You bring Bikurim in front of the Mizbeach. Now, Hashem is not sacrificing anything because Hashem is the world, it's Hashem's world. But Hashem, by telling us to bring Bikurim and to be Makir Toiv to the Ribbono Shel Olam, He is in turn telling us the same way you're Makir Toiv to me, you have to be Makir Toiv to your fellow man. And when it comes to your fellow man, it involves sacrifice. The Shlemos, the complete approach to say thank you is a recognition of sacrifice. And that may also demand of you to sacrifice yourself to be Makir Toiv. That is why it's not just Bikurim is Hakaras HaToiv. There's an extra element on the Bikurim, and that is V'inachtoi lefnei mizbach Hashem Elokecha. Pesach begins V'amartem zevach Pesach. It's not called Pesach for nothing. It's called Pesach because it's a carbon Pesach. It's a sacrifice. And against the backdrop of a sacrifice is where we're Makir Tov. The only shlemus of being Makir Tov is you recognize the sacrifice that someone made on behalf of you. Look at the sacrifice our ancestors have made for us. How much they've given up to guarantee that we are still here today. Look at the sacrifice of Moshe Rabbeinu, what he did for us, to guarantee that we are here still today. On this day of Pesach, when you're coming to be Makir Toiv, you have to be Makir Toiv against the backdrop of a Pesach, of a Zevach. And the Zevach has to be B'shlemus in front of the Mizbeach. And therefore, the only words that you can find to express the Hakaras HaToiv are the words that are found in Bikurim, because Bikurim captures that element of sacrifice. Okay, that's one idea. Another idea of why you focus on the Mizbeach is, I want to suggest, is comes from the Zman. Now let me first tell you Ovart, which is not related, and then it ties in into this 100%. Kodshei Kalim, Rabbi Yisai, when you bring Kodshei Kalim, a carbon shlomim, what's the time limit? How much time do you have to eat your Kodshei Kalim?
2 days and one night.
2 days and one night, which means the day when I bring it, the night, and the following day. Correct?
Yes.
All Kodshei Kalim follow this rule. 2 days and the night in between. What about Kodshei Kodoshim? No, Kodshei Kodoshim is more sacred, 1 day, one night. There's one exception.
Yeah.
And that is the Karban Toida. The Karban Toida is purely a shlamim. It is 100% the status of a shlamim. Kodshei Kalim. It's just a variation of a shlamim. And yet, carbon toida, what's the time limit of kodshei toida? 1 day and the following night. You don't get another day. And the question is, why not? Zelofer, why not? And the answer is, toida is very different than all other korbanos. Toida, you're coming to say to Hashem, thank you. Thank you for what you've done for me. When it comes to saying thank you, you don't have tomorrow to say thank you. Thank you has to be said immediately. Part of the rules of saying thank you is, it can't be stale. When someone does you a toiva, the Torah is teaching you, oh, you bring a carbon toiva, you eat it 1 day. No dilly-dally. When you say thank you, it's only a thank you if you say thank you immediately. If you let the thank you become stale, it's a stale thank you.
Dissipates.
It's a stale thank you. Someone does you a toiva, they expect you should say thank you. If you don't say thank you right away, it's a mu'uvas she'eino yochol liskoin. There's no way to rectify it. A thank you has to be said bo bayom. Bikurim, there are many thank yous in the Torah. When Rabbi Yisai, do you bring Bikurim? When the fruits blossom, when do they blossom? Shavuos. Uvayoyim ha-Bikurim. Until when can you bring it? When you bring it, what do? You bring the Bikurim, you put it down, and you say, thank you, Arami, or you go to the Gansa, the whole Megillah, you say thank you to Hashem. When is the time over? Sukkos. If you do not say thank you by Sukkos, then guess what? Don't bother. Too late. Too little, too late. Too little, too late. When can you say that? Do you still bring it? Yeah. Mi Sukkos at Hanukkah, maybe? The Einoi Koire. You can't say thank you. And when you come to Hanukkah, don't even bring it. I'm not even interested. Bring is also an expression of saying thank you, Tasha. Even the fact that you bring it, you also is an expression of thank you. Hanukkah Atzeres, you don't even bring it all together. The law of Bikurim teaches you how to say thank you. You don't let the thank you become stale. You know, I do some work, computer work, so I hire people on a certain website, very popular website. And after the job is over, they demand feedback for the next people. You know, they should know, is this guy good or bad? They give you 3 days to give feedback. If you don't give your feedback for the job in 3 days, it's over. They close the window. The thank you for the services rendered in the Goyish world. This is a multi-billion-dollar website. The thank you for the services rendered have to be expressed immediately. Give you 3 days. After that, they don't trust you. They don't believe that your emotion of the service that has been performed by the service provider is authentic. Because this fellow may have done for you amazing, amazing work, and you have great appreciation, but if you're not going to say thank you and let the world know how great the work was within 3 days, or how bad it was, for that matter, how horrible it was within 3 days, we're not interested. Because after 3 days, this is the goyim. This is a goyish world. This is the goyim. The service is rendered. The Torah was way ahead of them. The Torah said, "You're in a carbon toida. You got 1 day, not like a carbon shalom. 1 day, 2 days. It comes bikurim. Hashem gave you matana. He gave you parnasa. You say thank you. You can bring from Pesach, from Shavuos until Sukkos. After Sukkos, maybe you can bring it." I don't need your thank you. Get lost. And after Hanukkah, I don't even want a token of appreciation because it's nothing to me. This is essential Lel Pesach when we're coming to be Makir Tov to the Ribbono Shel Olam for Yitzias Mitzrayim. You have to learn the lessons of Bikurim because Bikurim is telling you maybe the Eina Koyre. Okay, now let's go to another quick idea. Yeah,
I think you have this. I know myself very, very often. We go to weddings and we don't give the gift till weeks or months later. When you get the thank you from the, well, you know,
it's meaningless. It's already the whole thing dissipates.
I don't think it's meaningless.
No, but money is money, but it's not everything. As I call also yofe beitoy. Everything is yofe beitoy. Beitoy. Someone sends you an invitation to a wedding. The first few days after they send out the invitations, their minds are open. You give them the hanah to respond. You're coming, you're not coming, to write a note.
Right.
People, I've seen this sometimes, they thrive, most, not everyone, they thrive if you write something.
Right. And you just write. Not coming. That's also, you're telling them, right?
No, but not somebody just not a check off. It's so cheap to me that people they have check marks, coming, not coming, Simchas Mekala.
Yeah.
Even if they give you a check mark, it doesn't prevent you from turning the card around and writing on it whatever you want, to write in words. And if you write something nice, they remember it for life. I was spooked out. I wrote a couple of years ago on Purim. Someone did me a toiva, a big toiva, so I gave him very nice in Shalchmanas. And I spent time writing the card to write something, you know, appropriate. This year, they said, you know, they saved it. They didn't save the Mishalachmanas. Okay, the Mishalachmanas is long gone. But the card they saved, the card they have. They have the card. They told me what I wrote on the card. It's like, you know, it makes a difference. Someone sends out invitations, right away their minds are open to be receptive to the response. You wait a week before the wedding, or 2 days before the wedding, they're fatracht, getting the clothing and the makeup and the hair and this and that. They're not into the, they don't have the presence of mind to appreciate. Es hakol osa yofe beitoy. Where do you learn that from? In the Torah. Bikurim. Only Bikurim. Because Bikurim has a very specific set of zmanim in how you say thank you. Hashem did you a toiva. The toiva was done for you on Shavuos. V'yom ha-bikurim, say thank you. Mishavuos at Sukkos, maybe you bring a token of appreciation, the koire, and you say thank you. You miss that zman. It's now after Sukkos. No, you can maybe you can bring your token of appreciation, but the einoi koire, it's stale. The thank you is stale. After Hanukkah, you know what? I don't even need a token of appreciation because it's so super duper stale, your thank you, it's meaningless. Lel Pesach, Hashem did us a taiva. We're still here to talk about it. After all these years, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, he gave us the Torah. And you will list a whole long list of the Dayenus. There's 26 Chaydus. And now it's we reenact it, we relive it, we renew. And you say to Hashem, thank you. Say thank you tonight, today, Hayoim. Learn the lesson of Bikurim. Don't let your thank you turn stale. Es hakol osi yofe bi'itoy. Okay, let's now go to another idea. This idea. What?
Also, Yonai King should bring me himself. The Anbetonut, it should be Kurim. It also shows the Anbetonut that any person, even king, he should bring.
There are other reasons. Humility, the humility you bring yourself. There are many. We just developed these two different ideas. Now, let's go to another idea. Now, there's a Shiloh. This is something he discusses. A lot of things he mentions Beremes, but he touches upon amazing ideas. Rabbi Shachter. And that is, there was always a debate if we, Bizman Hazeh, should bring the Korban Pesach today in Golos. Because we all know, the Rambam, you do not need a Beis HaMikdash to offer a Korban Pesach.
Right.
You just need the right location.
And a Kohen.
And a Kohen. And the Big Day Kahuna. And the truth is, all of these things we can do today. There's no doubt about it. You don't know the right location, so you do the best you can. You take a bezdin, and they go basar roiv. Halacha follows Torah labas shemaim. We don't need a malach elokim to come and tell us where the mizbeach was. You do the best you can. We have research. We have a lot of studies. We can bring together today all the biggest experts, all the biggest chachamim, and they'll take a vote. They'll take a vote. Different opinions, the majority wins, and if one day we'll discover that it's not the right place, so we'll move over, we'll move it to a different location next year. And it's kosher. That's halacha, that's the way the halacha works. The halacha works, you go basarayv. You need a koyein? No, gedoy lechazaka. The guy gets koyein today. Who got koyein today in your shul for the first aliyah? He's good enough. Don't go give me this Torah. Oh, it's choshen, the yichus, this, that. Yeah. Fine. Gedoyla chazaka. Good enough. Big Day Kahuna, do the best you can do. This idea that it has to be perfect, you'll get nowhere. You won't get to first base. This is not a Jewish approach to life. So if that's the case, the question is, why, Taka, have we never brought a Korban Pesach? Since the time, first of all, is it a fact that after the Churban Bayis Sheni, they brought Korban Pesach. That is a fact. Even after that, and it could be even there were different tukuvas where they taka brought. They brought, there was no Bayis HaMikdash, they had their access to the Har HaBayis, they paid off the, today, you know, for enough money today, I'm sure you can pay them off, you don't like you bring the Korban Pesach today. Give them enough money, still hate, they'll let you bring a Korban Pesach. I'm willing to bet. Maybe not. I think you go there to the Har HaBayis today. So what? You'll tell me, Tome, Hodra B'tzibur. There's an answer to every halachic, any halachic obstacle you can get over. So why, Taka, don't we bring it today? So he cites here one of the Mepharshim. I don't remember who he says. I forgot the name of the one of the Mepharshim. He says something fascinating. It says in the Pasuk, the Hasiraisi es Mizbichoy Seichem, V'loy Oriach B'Reach Nichoy Chachem. Okay, where is this pasuk? I don't remember. I think it's in Devarim somewhere, in Chumash Devarim somewhere, in Chumash Devarim. V'hashimois, maybe it's in the Kisisa. Meshpatim. Hashem says, don't misbehave. Don't misbehave, Jewish people, my Am HaNivcha, watch out, I'm giving you Hasra. If you're going to misbehave, v'hasiroisi, es mizbichoy seichem. I will demolish your altar. And then it says, V'loy oriach bereach nichoichachem. I will not savor the fragrance of your offerings. So the question is, the second half of the pasuk is redundant. Once HaKadosh Baruch Hu already has demolished the Beis HaMikdash, V'hasiroisi es mikdash sheichem, there no longer is a mikdash So Mimeila, there's no Beis HaMikdash, so there's nothing to offer. There's nothing to offer. There's no need for the pasuk to say V'loy Ariach B'Reach Nichoichachem. Right? So isn't it redundant? If Hashem has the Malish Rasiroisis Mikdashechem, so we're not offering Karbonos, we're offering Karbonos. So what's the mean over here? V'loy Ariach. So the answer is no, that's not true. Just because Hashem has shown us disfavor, has shown his anger, and he has destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, we can still bring korbanos. So once Hashem has destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, no. Very good, Hashem destroyed, but Hashem still allows us to bring on the Mokaim HaMikdash, the Mokaim HaMizbeach, the Korbanos. Hashem says, you know something, don't even bother. V'loy Ariach B'Reach, I don't want your Korbanos. The reason why the Gedolei Yisrael throughout the generations did not run, were not interested in bringing Korban Pesach, it just did not interest them to go and bribe the Goyim and go and be Moser Nefesh. Korban Pesach, Chorus, because the answer is, there's another element. Just because there's no Beis HaMikdash, today, can we say about ourselves today that Hashem has favor, enjoys Vayorach Hashem is Reach HaNichoyach? Can we say that about ourselves today? Can we really say that Hashem is happy with us? And the consensus of many Gedolei Yisrael is, can't say that today. Hashem has shown his anger by destroying the Beis HaMikdash. That's something tangible. V'hasi roisi es mikdasheichem. The next part of the pasuk is something which is obscure. We don't know what's going on in Shemayim. No one knows. No one came back to tell us what Hashem is thinking. If he's gonna enjoy the Ariach Esrech Nichoichachem. But the sense that many Gedolei Yisrael is, there are so many problems that are exist in Klal Yisrael. It's a chutzpah on our part to think that Hashem has nachas ruach from the Reach Nichoichachem. Hashem has shown clearly, it's very likely, and therefore, who are we fooling? Who are we fooling? You think you're a Baal Gaiva, you're going to go, you're going to bring a carbon, Hashem's going to be, you don't need a Beis HaMikdash, that's right. But you do need, Vayorach Hashem Esreach HaNichoyach. And Hashem explicitly said, V'loy Ariach B'Reach Nichoichachem. And we're so clever, we're so smart to say, no, now Hashem is going to be Ariach B'Reach Nichoichachem. And therefore, don't even bother. L'may Nafgemina, the end of the Seder is called Nirtza. What is this all about? Why in the Haggadah does it say that we should be zoche, we're mispalo, that next year we should be zoche to bring a korban lirotzoin? What's the lirotzoin next year? Next year, we're not necessarily hoping to bring the korban Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe next year, halavai, we should be able to bring a korban not on the Beis HaMikdash. Boy, we're going to go so quickly. You're going to go from A to Z. You're going to get a PhD in overnight. You got to go through steps. Maybe one thing at a time. Hashem did two things to us. He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, v'lo yoriach l'reach nicham. Let's go in stages. Let's first try to get to the madrega of nirtza, that Hashem should find it pleasing in his eyes, the offering of our sacrifices. It should be l'ratzoin. Then, after we come to that madrega where we can say that Hashem has nachas ruach, then we can go to the next madrega of having a Beis HaMikdash. This is the emphasis, the theme of the Haggadah. the concept of Nirtza, the last section of the Haggadah, Nirtza, the last section, the section that we must follow, that it should be L'Ratzoin, that is something which has to come before Yivnoi Beisai B'Karayif. You can't have the Beisai B'Karayif until you first have the Oriach B'Reach Nichaychachem. And maybe in a Chanami, that's how it will happen. It will happen in these different stages. All right, Beisai, thank you for listening. Have a good day.
Abdan with Abdan
We were both on the same flight. The way back we were on the same flight.
It wasn't
asking the question. What impressed you about Israel most? Says the people they knew so much. In America, they knew nothing. So that's why Lev Lachman.
They already know a lot.
They already know that they're infiltrated with history and with.
It's got to be in the Devarim, that the lower area. I'm trying to think if it's Balak or Fukas. It could be Korach. I don't know.
Seven grandchildren.
I think it could be Korach. I'm just trying to think because I'm thinking where God is angry and that he doesn't want Korach.
They say whatever is on their mind.
That's why in America.
Some of my grandchildren don't get along here with that because they can't pay you.
Their mental state is very, very different.
Yeah.
FSK
not seeing the grit.
Yeah, I know.
The whole thing.
They're very aggressive.
My wife didn't come. I went for Hanukkah. My daughter had 5 kids. And she said, you're supposed to babysit for me. They were. So I said, what am I going to do with 5 kids? I was alone. So my 10-year-old granddaughter said, I'm going to take care of you. You just go buy snacks. And she took care. And what they did there, she gave the youngest one first the snacks. And then off. In America, the older kids go, and the hell with the younger ones. And I asked her, why are you giving the youngest? Because she's going to scream if I give it. I don't want to scream. Okay. Now, I was telling him that Avi Gold, I once, you know who Avi Gold is?
Avi Gold?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So he was a year or two ahead of RJJ.
Yeah.
So I met him on a trip years ago.
Yeah.
And Otsko was paying, and he told me on the way back, we were on the same flight.
He's found at a Thai store in Allen's.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I asked him, what impressed you most about your trip to Israel? This was his first trip.
Yeah.
He says the Chilonim. They knew so much.
Right.
Yeah.
Some of them do.
The guys. No. When they grew up, the people that grew up in a shtetl knew so much. I had to give a. I was at a symposium with famous authors. They were quoting and doing.
Which one?